Monday, June 18th, 2018. Welcome to the Daily Wrap-Up, a concise show dedicated to bringing you the most relevant independent news as we see it from the last 24 hours. Well, we have a lot of important news to cover today, but I wanted to quickly note that I have an interview tomorrow with Vanessa Beely. And if you're unfamiliar with her work, I highly recommend you check it out from 21st Century Wire, as well as many other sites that have shared and published her work, as well as past interviews we've had with her on The Last American Vagabond. We're going to be talking about the White Helmets, Syria, Yemen, and much more. So be sure and check that out. As well as note on the fact that on days that I tend to do interviews, I may not be able to get to my daily show. So for those out there that are always eager to see the next episode, make sure that you check out thelastamericanvagabond.com, especially on days that I don't get to the daily show, as there will always be new articles posted there daily from a variety of sources. So I'd like to open today with a quote from Glenn Greenwald, and this shouldn't be taken as an advocation for Glenn or his website, The Intercept. Regardless of who said this, it is absolutely spot on and really sets the tone for the topics of today. It actually comes from an article written by John Whitehead entitled, "Government Eyes Are Watching You. We Are All Prisoners of the Surveillance State." And I highly recommend you read this article because it really gets into some pretty intense information that should open the eyes of a lot of people who may not be really aware of what's going on around them. And it's something we've also posted on The Last American Vagabond, and his articles always tend to be really jarring for those that are unfamiliar with this kind of information. Anyway, the quote goes, "The way things are supposed to work is that we're supposed to know virtually everything about what government officials do. That's why they're called public servants. They're supposed to know virtually nothing about what we do. That's why we're called private individuals. This dynamic, the hallmark of a healthy and free society, has been radically reversed. Now they know everything about what we do and are constantly building systems to know more. Meanwhile, we know less and less about what they do as they build walls of secrecy behind which they function. That's the imbalance that needs to come to an end. No democracy can be healthy and functional if the most consequential acts of those who wield political power are completely unknown to those to whom they are supposed to be accountable." Which is just very concise and very, just it's such an important quote, regardless of who said it. That really does cut to the quick of what's going on today. And it's something that we constantly point out about how things are completely flipping around and what the concept, the fact that the people are supposed to be the ones truly in charge of what happens in a real democracy, or rather a republic or democratic republic, or whatever you believe this country was supposed to be, it is not that. And what we're increasingly inching towards is something incredibly totalitarian, but dressed up as something entirely different, a real prison of the mind, which is something this article really gets into. So as all the stuff we discuss, I always recommend you read them for yourselves to really understand the information. But that quote really does set the tone for things we talk about on this show a lot, especially today. So for the first article of the day, coming from ZeroHedge.com, U.S. to double number of Marines in Norway to counter Russia before massive military exercise. Now, we talked about these military exercises recently and the concept that all of these actions in regard to the U.S. fleets, as well as these upcoming, Cold War-esque military drills, are presented as a way to essentially counter Russia. But then they conversely say, oh, but they're not supposed to be a threat to Russia, but they're to counter Russia, which is, again, just this nonsensical political doublespeak. But the real point of this, as well as many other things, is to counter Russia doing what? What exactly is Russia doing that necessitates a U.S. counter? Nothing. And if you say cyber attacks, fine, that seems to be the ongoing claim, despite there being no evidence that it's actually happening. And the Russia investigation has produced a resounding zero. But even if it was true, and that's certainly possible, one does not counter cyber attacks with military personnel. This is all a mirage, as we pointed out so many times in the past, to bloat the military budget and to continue U.S. imperialism around the world. At a graduation ceremony for the U.S. Naval War College, U.S. Secretary of Defense James Mattis asserted that Russian President Vladimir Putin, quote, aims to diminish the appeal of the Western democratic model and attempts to undermine America's moral authority, and that, quote, his actions are designed not to challenge our arms at this point, but to undercut and compromise our belief in our ideals. And there it is. Realizing that it is now painfully obvious just how hollow their claims of countering Russia truly are, they now shift to yet another intangible, unverifiable claim, akin to a war on terror, that the real threat is not Russia's arms, but their subtle divisive tactics to undermine what arguably does not exist at all, the U.S.'s moral authority. Propaganda wars have been ongoing since the beginning of time, and claiming that Russia is somehow trying to surreptitiously undermine America's belief in its own government, while being entirely possible, likely even, is very hard to actually prove, and is actually what the U.S. does in spades around the world. So it's not only shamefully hypocritical to call out Russia for this without evidence and use it to build up militarily while they are not, further bloating the already absurd military budget, but I should not have to point out that the U.S.'s own verifiable actions of the past and currently underway have done and are doing a damn good job on their own of undermining any semblance of moral authority they might try to lay claim to. And even if Russia is fanning that already burning flame, it is just like we saw with the WikiLeaks during the 2016 election. The claim being that Russia was somehow trying to hurt Clinton and the U.S. by leaking the truth? God forbid. But we know that was more than likely someone like Seth Rich or another insider, and clearly not Russia anyway. But hurting the U.S. by telling the truth is a pretty damn revealing claim in its own right. So think about that concept when they're continuing to use Russia as some kind of boogeyman scapegoat to continue to bloat the military budget with your tax dollars. Moving on to the next story coming from activistpost.com. As Social Security and Medicare go bankrupt, U.S. gives $10.5 million a day to Israel. As the United States government admits that Social Security and Medicare services are going bankrupt and will both be completely depleted within the next 16 years, I should note something that many people try to claim as some kind of a partisan talking point or conspiracy theory. Sorry, it's just simple mathematics, and it's pretty broadly understood by most people in power today. But American taxpayers today are giving around $10.5 million a day to Israel that is routinely accused of human rights violations. The latest report from the Social Security Administration revealed that Social Security funds will be depleted by 2034, and Medicare funds will be depleted completely by 2026, 3 years earlier than what was last reported. So we have to continue to stand back and see this kind of ridiculous concept where we are putting absurd amounts of money, billions of dollars, into helping Israel carry out human rights violations, verifiably so, as we continue to see this mount where the world is continuing to point and call out what Israel's doing in Gaza against the Palestinians, which is absolutely absurd, while we see our country completely deteriorate. Infrastructure, water, any number of things, education, completely falling apart. Even verifiably so when you look at the statistics of other countries around the world. This concept of America being number one is statistically untrue, especially in many of the categories that we desperately need to put this kind of money into. But yet we're continuing to put $10.5 million a day into funding Israeli military actions. We need to begin to think about that. As the author writes, while the U.S. government's failure to take care of its citizens may be viewed as a good thing because it lets them turn to solutions in the private sector to solve their problems, which I do agree with in a kind of backward way, that it's forcing people to look outside the box and realize the government is really not there to help them. The government is still robbing citizens through taxes and making it look as if it will benefit them in the long run through programs such as Social Security and Medicare that we now see is clearly a fraud. Now, in reality, the federal government is using this money it extorts from citizens to fund endless wars in the Middle East, with the price tag for the longest war in U.S. history costing double the estimate of what it would cost to end homelessness in the U.S. annually in 2018. Now, we pointed this out before in regard to homelessness, in regard to world hunger. These are numbers that we casually just dismiss, and it would benefit the planet in some regard, but this specifically, homelessness in the U.S., yet we a fraction of the money we throw out for military budgets and helping other countries could literally end homelessness in the United States, which it just is staggering to really think about that for a second. If they truly wanted to help the American people, they could take a fraction of this money and buy homes for everyone who didn't have them. Now, you could argue, you know, finicky little aspects of that kind of statement, like, oh, well, then people will just depend on the government. But that's beside the point. We're talking about simply using money to help other countries that should be used to help Americans, and it's not happening. Millions of taxpayer dollars are also being spent on questionable foreign aid programs, such as the United States increasing pledges of military aid to Israel, which is the real point here. And it's something we need to, and it's not just about Israel, but the reason that's so important is because of all of the things we're seeing overseas and all of the fact that Israel is blatantly disregarding just international norms and committing war crimes on a regular basis, and yet we're using money that should go to Americans and funding someone like that. And to further that point, the next story coming from MiddleEastMonitor.com, EU backs effort to prosecute Israeli military officials for human rights violations. The European Union is funding a project to prosecute Israeli Defense Force officers for committing violations against Palestinian civilians. This is a huge statement to make. To see the European Union collectively fund something like this is a huge statement, especially when you consider the U.S. government unquestioningly standing behind anything Israel does. And now we're seeing the European Union funding something like this. It really sends a message to the whole world about what's really going on there. The pro-Israel group NGO Monitor analyzes the funding and performance of non-governmental organizations, which keep an eye on violations committed by the IDF. It reported, quote, following the request of Israeli human rights organizations, the European Union has begun funding a project for the prosecution of Israeli military staff involved in the violation of human rights in the occupied Palestinian territories. Also important to note that the claim occupied, which is very obviously the case, but something that people like Nikki Haley and other people that are just incredibly pro-Israel and Zionists ultimately pretend like it's not occupied territory, but that it's Israel. We have to remember this is occupied Palestine. That's what this is. It's an important point to remember, and the fact that they write it like that, it just continues to show you what this kind of shift in perception. Human rights groups have confirmed their belief that Israel, quote, does not conduct serious investigations into the violations its soldiers are committing against Palestinians. What's more, they added that they, quote, almost always acquit IDF personnel suspected of violations, especially those committed during raids on Palestinian homes. The project is expected to last until 2021. Israeli rights groups, Yesh Din, literally translates to There Is Law, is behind the EU project in partnership with other organizations, including Doctors for Human Rights and the Breaking the Silence movement. The project aims to establish an evidence bank by collecting testimonies on IDF activities and attacks through providing Palestinian women with video cameras to record violations during house raids. Israeli human rights organizations say that they are seeking to put political pressure on the government by putting the IDF's apparent impunity at the top of the international agenda so that it is one of the issues discussed by foreign governments and their Israeli counterpart. Now, it's a very great thing to see something like this. It's a very, like I said, of all these, even the United Nations steps, as people always point out, that they almost always amount to nothing. The fact that it's even being said, and the fact that the European Union is actually putting money into this, is a huge step, and it really does show a lot of people who question the validity of the fact that they're even committing war crimes, which are pretty damn apparent. It shows them that this is a real thing that is really happening, and it just gives some credence to these claims. But again, until we actually see some action from this, some real consequences for people involved, I mean, I'm not going to hold my breath, but I really hope this kind of thing moves forward in a very positive way. the idea of the cameras for women. I mean, it's kind of a lofty goal because clearly they can be taken away. They can be manipulated. There's not much control for these kind of things happening within occupied Palestine, but it's a step in the right direction. So this kind of news is very positive, and it's something we should all support and continue to show people this that don't believe this kind of thing's actually happening. Show them, look, the European Union clearly thinks that Israel is at the very least not holding their own people accountable. I mean, it goes much further than that, as we all know. But again, great step in the right direction. Moving on to the next story coming from antimedia.com, Trump orders Pentagon to immediately establish a space force. During a press conference Monday, Donald Trump announced, as he's hinted previously, that he's ordering the Pentagon to immediately establish a space force as an independent service branch of the military. As the author notes, today might be the day that future generations look back on as the anniversary of the creation of the legendary U.S. Space Force, Guardians of Intergalactic Order. Trump said, quote, "We must have an American dominance in space. Very importantly, I am hereby directing the Department of Defense and Pentagon to immediately begin the process necessary to establish a space force as the sixth branch of the armed forces." Now, this is a big deal, not just because, I mean, this is something we could have clearly assumed would eventually happen. But the reason this is a big deal is because of a lot of things involved here. It really, some would say this has a high likelihood of violating yet another treaty for the U.S. And the treaty I'm referring to is considered, it's called the Outer Space Treaty, formerly known as the Treaty on Principles Governing the Activities of States in the Exploration and Use of Outer Space, including the Moon and Other Celestial Bodies. And clearly, you can see why it's formally known as that. Very long title. But this treaty, the Outer Space Treaty, essentially forms the basis of international space law. But it gets really interesting when you understand what this treaty is really about. Among its principles, it bars states party to the treaty from placing weapons of mass destruction in Earth orbit, installing them on the moon or any other celestial body, or otherwise stationing them in outer space. It exclusively limits the use of the moon and other celestial bodies to peaceful purposes and expressly prohibits their use for testing weapons of any kind, conducting military maneuvers, or establishing military bases, installations, and fortifications. That's Article 4. However, the treaty does not prohibit the placement of conventional weapons in orbit. The treaty explicitly forbids any government to claim a celestial resource, such as the moon or a planet. Article 2 of the treaty states that, quote, "Outer space, including the moon and other celestial bodies, is not subject to national appropriation by claim of sovereignty, by means of use or occupation, or by any other means. However, the state that launches a space object retains jurisdiction and control over that object. The state is also liable for damages caused by their space object that could possibly fall or whatever other possible damage it could cause." So the obvious implications of Trump plainly claiming that the DOD and Pentagon are establishing a military space force seem to make it highly likely that this treaty, that this essentially will be the next treaty that will be broken by the U.S. empire. First, in my opinion, I should point out, in my opinion, I find it highly unlikely that if the U.S. successfully builds a space force, that they will refrain from occupying or using the moon or, you know, to its advantage. I mean, that's something we have to really just kind of throw out the window. Clearly, the first person to really dominate the space using a force is going to use places like the moon as a base of operations. I mean, that's pretty obvious to assume that, but it is an assumption. And second, the idea that they will not prepare and ready weapons of mass destruction in this area just kind of seems naive to me. But I mean, are others not already doing so, possibly, or trying to do so? Or maybe does the U.S. not already have weapons like that in space? I mean, it's something we're not really privy to, which kind of goes back to that beginning quote that we don't really know what's going on with our military here. But this is a very interesting step because it's very clearly a militarized move, which shouldn't surprise us with everything that's happening today. But it's pretty damn naive to think this treaty will not be violated. And we're going to see military installations begin to be built and used for defense, which almost all of our money that we put into taxes goes to the military. The U.S. spends more than half of the world's military spending. We pointed this out many times. So to think this won't have a military force edge to it is just kind of naive. But again, this is all assumptions. I mean, this is all incredibly preliminary. We have to see where this really goes. This could all just be kind of a grand idea to give him some political points, but I don't know. It just, to me, it seems like this is almost just set to violate that treaty, which shouldn't really surprise us. Now, for the final story of the day, coming from Caitlin Johnstone, it's entitled, "It's Time to Start Getting Enraged at What Western Imperialists Have Done to Syria." Now, I tend to quote her work quite a bit. She's a fantastic writer, and if you're not familiar with her work, I highly recommend you check it out. Now, this article is very well done, and as I always say, all of the articles I discuss, you should always take a moment and read them for yourself, come to your own opinion about them, despite what I say. But then this one specifically, I really think you should read, because it really does open your eyes to what's really going on, not just with a lot of facts, which is always important, but really kind of shifts the narrative and really shows you what's really going on behind all of this that, you know, it kind of supersedes all the nonsense you might hear from mainstream media if you were actually watching that. So I'm just going to read you a quick little excerpt from this, and then I have a quote to finish the day. "The United States and its allies started the war in Syria. The narrative that it was an organic uprising brutally attacked by the Assad government is a lie. There is no reasonable doubt about this. The former prime minister of Qatar said on television that the U.S. and its allies were involved in the Syrian conflict from the very beginning. A WikiLeaks cable and a declassified CIA memo both show the U.S. government plotting to provoke an uprising in Syria exactly as it occurred years before it happened. Just like we're seeing in Iran, I should note. Former Foreign Minister of France, Ronald Dumas, stated that he was informed that the UK was engineering an uprising in Syria 2 years before the violence erupted in 2011. And General Wesley Clark stated that there were Pentagon plans to take out the Syrian government in 2001. Shortly after the violence started, President Obama secretly authorized the arming and training of violent extremist factions for the overthrow of Assad in a CIA program codenamed Timber Sycamore," which, if you're unfamiliar with that, check it out, look it up. It's very important information, "which, along with Saudi finances, has wound up aiding some of the most evil terror groups ever to exist." Very true. 600,000 Syrians have lost their lives as a result of this regime change intervention. Many of those lives ending in the most horrific ways imaginable at the hands of depraved jihadists. It was planned, and the people who planned it have names and addresses. They deserve to be punished to the fullest extent of the law for what they did. We should all be loudly demanding war crimes tribunals and life imprisonment for these vicious criminals. They circulate pictures of dead children whenever their deaths can be blamed on a longtime target of Western imperialism, but never when their deaths are caused by Western imperialism. Today, the narratives most prolifically circulated by proponents of regime change interventionism in Syria are almost entirely emotional in nature, consisting of nothing more than constant repetition of nonsensical talking points about civilians being brutalized by a sadistic dictator in various ways for no apparent reason. Just like they were calling Kim Jong-un very recently, but now seem to be dealing with him. This is all to generate sympathy in order to bypass people's skepticism of pro-interventionist narratives. Very, very important to understand everything said there. Like I said, check the article out for yourself. Very profound. But this idea that they're constantly using emotion, like I always point out, to manipulate the way you see things and circumvent your logic in what's really going on. We can see, like I pointed out with Kim Jong-un, the shifting narrative from one day to the next, where one day he's a maniac, just maniacal, sadistic killer, and then the next, because it suits their narrative, oh, well, now we're finding a deal. Where before it was not possible. It's just, it's constantly lies shifting around to suit whatever's happening in the day. And what's going on in Syria is just profoundly horrific, as well as places like Yemen and Palestine and all these different things we point out. It's just the propaganda around them is what we have to begin to see past. And I think that's something that she really hits the nail on the head. Now, I'd like to end today with the quote, as I said, that many of you are familiar with, that seemed all too fitting for the topics discussed. A quote from Mario Savio. "There's a time when the operation of the machine becomes so odious, makes you so sick at heart, that you can't take part. You can't even passively take part. And you've got to put your bodies upon the gears and upon the wheels, upon the levers, and all the apparatus. You've got to make it stop. You've got to indicate to the people who run it, the people who own it, that unless you're free, the machine will be prevented from working at all. It is indeed time we've remembered the type of revolutionary spirit that has been conditioned and indoctrinated out of us, the type of skepticism and critical thinking that has been beaten from our minds and stolen from our hearts by those who have taken this country out from under us. It is indeed time we begin throwing ourselves upon the gears to stop this machine from working at all." For more information on the topics discussed, make sure you check out thelastamericanvagabond.com or any of the important independent sources in the show notes below. And as always, question everything. Come to your own conclusions. Stay vigilant.